That's Bob Dylan. And I agree with him. I believe we're joined by Zafar Bengash. Are you there, sir? Maybe is Zafar there?
Yes, hello, sir.
Oh.
I'm with you.
I'm sorry, sir. Zafar, there's two big questions. One has to do with Kashmir. They are on the United, and I'll make the second one. I would like to ask you about also the border issue, Azerbaijan, Iran, Armenia, which is, I think, a frightening situation. But starting with Kashmir, they're on the United Nations docket each year. How long has this been going on, and why isn't there a resolution?
It's a very, very good question. It started as far back as 1948, and it was India that brought the matter before the UN Security Council because there was an uprising by the people whose state, the state of Jammu and Kashmir, was illegally occupied by Indian troops when the overwhelming majority of the people of Kashmir had made absolutely clear that they wanted to be part of Pakistan. Now, we need to understand that in August of 1947, when the British colonialists left India, two independent states emerged, Pakistan and India. And of course, Pakistan was and is a predominantly Muslim country. India is a predominantly Hindu country.
Mm-hmm.
And the people of Kashmir, of course, there are two regions or three, Jammu, Kashmir, and Ladakh. Jammu at that time was 62% Muslim. The Kashmir Valley was 97% Muslim.
Mm.
And Ladakh was basically divided between Muslims and Buddhists. And India illegally occupied all three by landing its forces against the wishes of the people. Of course, a war erupted. And when India saw that it was going to lose that war, it took the matter to the Security Council. And in January of 1948, a Security Council resolution was passed, which was accepted by both India and Pakistan, that a referendum would be held in Kashmir.
And by the way, a Canadian, prominent Canadian was involved in that agreement.
Yes, absolutely. Andrew McNaughton, who was a retired general of the Canadian Army, of course, he was now serving as a diplomat. He was the president of the Security Council at the time, and he basically led this resolution and was able to convince both Pakistan and India to accept this resolution, which mm-hmm. both countries did. And since that time, there have been 11 more Security Council resolutions reaffirming the Kashmiris' right to self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, gradually, Indian leaders started to back out of that promise that they had made, and today, unfortunately, they simply repudiate those Security Council resolutions, and they stubbornly claim that Kashmir is an integral part of India,
yeah.
without any regard to the wishes of the Kashmiri yeah. people.
They're disregarding, though, a resolution that has not evaporated. It remains.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
As
exactly.
a solution. Yes. It's like people talk about the situation with Palestine and Israel.
Yes.
The resolution remains.
Exactly.
And people do all kinds of rhetorical tricks, but you can't run away from the reality. The United Nations, what's the word? They seized on the matter.
Exactly. Not only that resolution, but as I mentioned, 11 other resolutions reaffirming this issue of a referendum to be held in the state of Jammu and Kashmir. And India, regrettably, has backed out of it now, and it stubbornly clings to the notion. Incidentally, nobody in the world accepts India's claim that mm-hmm. Kashmir is an integral part of India. It's on the UN statute. It is declared as, disputed territory, whose future has to be determined through a referendum. And that referendum, the resolution also states that the UN would supervise that referendum and allow the people to...
Yeah, it was a very rational... I've read that through, and I'm very impressed with, what they say is you can't it has to be properly done so the people are not threatened and intimidated while voting.
Yes.
It's almost understood that if you have a referendum under an occupying force, guess who wins the election?
That's why you have to do it right
and yes. honestly.
And this has been since August of 2019, India has done other acts which are totally contrary to this resolution, because India, you know, had given a certain degree of autonomy to the people of Kashmir until this matter was to be resolved. And this again dates back to the early 1950s. And this special status that was conferred upon Kashmir also included the fact that India would not take any steps to change the demographic composition of the state of Jammu and Kashmir. And yet in August of 2019, the present Indian regime under Modi, it abrogated those articles. They are part of India's own constitution, Article 370 and Article 35A. So Article 370 conferred special status on Kashmir, and Article 35A, which dates back even before the creation of India, as far back as 1931, that Kashmir, that no outsiders would settle in Kashmir in order to change the demography of the people. Mm-hmm. And that was also then, when India came into existence, incorporated in the Indian constitution, mm-hmm. That no outsiders can settle in Kashmir. But in August of 2019, the present Indian regime abrogated both these articles. So since that time, something like 3.5 million non-Kashmiris have been settled in Kashmir in order to dilute its population. So the people, the Kashmiris under India's occupation, are about 8 million. Mm-hmm. And if you bring in 3.5 million non-Kashmiris over there, and these are mainly retired military officers and their families, and they have set up these colonies, settlement colonies.
Reliable people.
So that's the situation that exists today in Kashmir.
And of course, there's been, thanks to your work, by the way, and many others in Canada and around the world, but there is an annual marking of this information. I wish the media would follow it. I just was speaking to Tamara Lorenz, a peace activist, about issues, and we're really, the idea we have a free media is just a way of sort of torturing us, because the information you just provided is not available to Canadians. The Globe isn't running long op-ed pieces about this matter. They don't even want to hear about it.
Yes. You know, about 30 years ago, this wasn't the case. 30 years ago, the Canadian media still paid some attention. I recall, you know, if I approached the media or submitted an op-ed,
we used to see you on television. You were
that they would like accepted. If I approached them with an op-ed, they would consider it. Mm-hmm. Now you mention anything to them, they just don't want to know about it. Unfortunately,
there's a saying.
They know about it. Ignored it. Now.
You know the saying that they know which side their bread is buttered on.
That's correct.
We're speaking to Zafar Bengash, Crescent International, in Zafar, you just say Zafar Bengash, and you'll be there. By the way, at this time, it's very important to follow Zafar on these matters. We should remind everybody, Pakistan and India are both nuclear powers, and it's not something to be sort of trifling with. The rest of the world should be paying attention and helping to solve.
Absolutely. This is a very, very crucial issue. In fact, the two countries have actually, you know, in recent years come to a state of war in which there was a very, very serious risk of nuclear weapons being used. Mm-hmm. It's a frightening prospect. I don't even want to contemplate it.
Yeah.
But regrettably, when you have people that are, mm-hmm. especially in India, that are so belligerent that they continue to kill Kashmiris without any regard to their rights or to their dignity. You know, since 1989, more than 100,000 Kashmiris have been killed. These are well-documented. There have been human rights organizations, international human rights organizations, Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, Even the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights has documented these. Even Indian human rights organizations have documented these, and yet the Indian government stubbornly refuses to.
Yes, the author, Roy, an award-winning author, is she spoken out, and her life was pretty much in danger because she did.
Yes, exactly. Arundhati Roy, a very courageous journalist in India, she was threatened with death as well as with rape. I mean, this is documented. Mm-hmm. She herself has spoken out about it, but she has not been deterred. She continues to speak out for the rights of not just the Kashmiri people, but all the oppressed people in India. For instance, there are about 200 Dalits whom they sort of, you know, the Indian hierarchy, the caste system refers to as untouchables. You know, these people are treated with so much hatred and they are looked down upon. They can't, you know, sit with the people that consider themselves upper caste and so on. They can't eat on the same table. They can't draw water from the same well. You know, Arundhati Roy has spoken about the rights of these people as well, that these are human beings. They should not be degraded in this manner. But unfortunately, India gets away with it, as you pointed out, because it's...
No, because America is more interested in the Shador, apart, not the Shador, the Shador, the veil in Iran. But then the matter you spoke of is forbidden.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, I mean, because the fact is that India has a fast-growing economy, and regrettably, the rest of the world considers that to be more important.
That's all that's
important. On the good side of India so that they can continue to trade with it. Yeah. And get material and financial benefits.
It's curious that their next-door neighbor is also a fast-growing economy, but that's considered a terrible danger to the humanity and peace.
Yes.
Speak of China. We're speaking also with Zafar Benghash. Zafar, a really interesting, complicated problem that I believe you're the one who can sort it out for us. There is a problem with Azerbaijan, Armenia. And there's been skirmishes, and there's threat of shift in power, or a shift in power. It's actually, the Azerbaijan government, as far as I know, is threatening an autonomous region of Armenia, and that has a border with Iran, and Iran is interested. So explain to us, what is this about?
Yes. The particular area that you are referring to is called Karabakh. Of course, the Armenians refer to as Nagorno-Karabakh. It's this region, Karabakh, is actually Azerbaijan territory. The majority of the people are Azeris over there, but it has been under Armenia's occupation for decades. Some 20 years ago, there was a war between Armenia and Azerbaijan. And the Azeris were making good progress, but then the government in Azerbaijan, for some reason, decided not to pursue this matter. So it withdrew its forces, and the person who was in charge of this campaign, he was a colonel in the Azeri army. He was actually considered a hero by many people. I happen to know his nephew very well, he was then, when he returned, he was obviously very upset that Azerbaijan was making progress and the government in Baku did not allow the Azeri forces to liberate that region because it does belong to Azerbaijan. And then, of course, this colonel was murdered in Azerbaijan, and the rest of his family had to leave the country because they were also threatened with death. Yeah. So, but this problem has continued. Iran's interest, of course, is that there is also a very large Azeri population that resides in Iran. For the benefit of your listeners, the current leader of Iran, Ayatollah Khamenei, is also of Azeri origin. So, you know, a lot of people think that Iran is a Persian country. Of course it is. Persians do, you know, constitute... Yes. A majority, but there are other groups as well, and you can see that an Azeri...
You can see how someone who might be looking to cause destabilization and maybe ethnic paranoia would begin to talk about that.
Yes, exactly.
And they say,
and in fact, you know, Iran does not want instability on its border.
They seem insistent about wanting to maintain the border the way it is.
Yes.
For their reasons. And why can't they get an assurance from Azerbaijan? Is it also true that Israel and Azerbaijan have a special relationship?
Unfortunately, that is very, very true. And that is a major concern for Iran, because many of the assassination attacks that have been carried out inside Iran have actually been carried out through the collaboration of the government in Azerbaijan. Of course, the government in Azerbaijan, or the regime, it's an oligarchic regime that was, Ilham Aliyev, who's now the president of Azerbaijan. He simply inherited his power from his father. So there are no elections. Anything that happens, they just basically, it's all manipulated. Most of the opposition leaders are in prison. Azeri government has very close ties with Israel, and Israel uses it in order to carry out.
The Iranians, I understand, believe that if that were, Azerbaijan were to achieve it under its current leadership, that would mean they would have an Israeli problem on their northern border.
Yes, absolutely. Exactly.
France is jumping in. France says it wants to come and help. and the U.S. wants to come and help. We have the gunpowder, so they all want to bring matches.
Yes. You see, wherever America has gone to help, I think instead of providing help, the people unfortunately have gone to hell. You can look at the situation in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen, all of these places that America came to help, and see what mess they have created. Literally, hundreds of thousands of people murdered, their economies destroyed, and total chaos has followed. So I think the people have realized that they are much better off without American help. And they would rather sort their own problems rather than allow the Americans to mess up their situation even more. I mean, we know about Libya as well. That was, the Americans and its so-called NATO allies went to liberate Libya.
Yes.
We know the infamous words of Hillary Clinton after Colonel Gaddafi was murdered. She said, "We came, we saw, and he died." And then a year later, the people that America had unleashed, the terrorist gangs in Libya, they murdered the American ambassador as well in Tripoli. So
yes.
This is something that I think...
They really play high adventure games. It's like with the Nord Stream 2. These are people prepared to break every law.
Yes.
And laugh in our face.
Yes.
Zafar, thank you very, very much. That's been very informative. Let's hope the regional states decide to talk to each other and keep the French and Americans out.
Exactly.
And we really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
It's
success
great
with your February and meeting on Kashmir.
Thank you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So for Ben Gash, and I think we reached that time.